Depending upon when and where you went to school, you might have been taught that the United States of America was founded by rich, white, slave-owning, godless, deist races that just didn't want to pay their fair share to the king. Or were the men who founded America and penned these words, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." Perhaps these men were actually men of God, who were willing to risk their lives, their liberty, and most importantly, their sacred honor, to secure these rights for their posterity. Founder of Patriot Academy, former Texas state legislator, and historian Rick Green will discuss the real history of the American Revolution and Independence Day. The real history of Independence Day next on Remembering History, The Quest for Truth.
Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11.
Because I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you. And the people who knock these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Therefore, I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
And welcome to Remembering History, The Quest for Truth. I'm your host, Dan Muir. Let's find out the real history of the American Revolution and Independence Day from our guest, historian and founder of Patriot Academy, Rick Green. Rick, welcome to the program.
Be with you, brother. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, man, it's great. Hey, Rick, before we get started, tell our audience a little bit about yourself and why you love history, and especially why you love American history.
Well, believe it or not, Dan, I used to hate history when I was in high school and college, had no interest in it, didn't really care about what happened yesterday. I was very type A, only worried about what happens tomorrow. But the more, as I got into law school and started reading the opinions of judges, I realized that their perception of yesterday determined their decisions today and therefore influenced us greatly going into the future. Same kind of thing happened. More read the Bible. I remember God, you know, saying over and over again, remember the former days and how many times they recounted the history of what God had done for the people. And you know, it just made me start thinking, you know, I need to know more about where we came from. If I really want to understand what it means to be an American, if I'm going to say I'm proud to be an American, if I'm going to wave the American flag, I need to know what that really stands for and what it means. And fortunately, somebody gave me an old cassette tape. You and I might know what those are. Some of your listeners may not. But anyway, I got an old cassette tape of David Barton. And for the first time, I actually heard, instead of just dates and names and places, I actually heard the stories come to life. So I began to, you know, he was just great at bringing to life through the eyes of the people that actually lived the history. It made me enjoy it more and really appreciate where we came from. And after that, man, I just became really a student of freedom. I had been around some guys that had sacrificed greatly for our freedom in World War II, and just being around them made me want to know more about why they were willing to give their life so that, you know, generations later we could be free. And that really started me on a journey. So I ended up serving in the state legislature in Texas for a little while. And that's why I started Patriot Academy, was to help raise up a new generation that not only gets what we're going to be talking about in terms of our history and our freedom, but they're committed to preserving it. And they want to help pass it to the generation that's coming after them. So former legislator, attorney, don't hold that against me, but I love teaching on the Constitution. We do Constitution classes across the nation and get people together and just literally walk through the Constitution and get people to understand, you know, where our freedoms are in the Constitution, what they really mean, how to defend them appropriately and properly. And we also do a television show called Chasing American Legends, where we go investigate some of history's mysteries, again, trying to bring it to life and make it real. I tell, you know, parents, I say, look, you want to get your kids hooked on history, have them watch Chasing American Legends. We have a comedian named Brad Stein in there with us. We keep it funny. the kids won't even realize. They're going to think they're just being entertained, but they're going to be learning great lessons about America and where we came from.
Yeah, no, that's really, really good stuff. And the stuff you do with Brad Stein is just, it's absolutely phenomenal. It's a lot of fun. And Rick, like you, I got bored with history class. No, I loved history movies, you know, ones with lots of action, World War II movies and stuff like that. So I found myself really enjoying, you know, things of the World War II era. But like you, I didn't realize American history until I stumbled across David Barton. And then he completely opened up my eyes and he presented this stuff in such an entertaining way that I became really, really interested. And I thought, you know, other people need to know this stuff. And So Rick, that's one of the reasons. And as you know, my son Noah went to one of your Patriot Academies.
Last summer,
life changing for him, and it was it's phenomenal. And so I highly recommend that if you want to learn more about Rick Green, go to I believe it's rickgreen.com. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, you can go there for the Chasing American Legends, the Constitution classes. You can get a link to Patriot Academy, but if they're interested in Patriot Academy, they can just go straight to that website, patriotacademy.com. And I mean, you watch one of the 3-minute videos on there and you'll be hooked. The over 25 folks are going to be saying, I want to go. And I'm not under 25.
Hey, what's the,
so
what's
we actually do have a program for them too, but it's all
do?
Available on the website.
Ooh, I might have to go. And what's the youngest age somebody can go to Patriot Academy?
16.
Okay. So my little guy's got a couple years yet. Okay. So, let's get started kind of with the foundation. You know, how did we get to the point? Okay. So way back when we were a colony of England. So as we know, the 13 colonies, that's why they're called the colonies, because we were a colony of Great Britain. And so let's kind of go back and let's see what started getting the colonists all upset. You know, why was there this rumbling going on? And maybe you want to start with the Reverend Jonas Clark.
Yeah, you know, in fact, it was John Adams that was asked who was most important in the Revolution. Who are the people that really made the Revolution happen? And he said, well, you know, obviously everybody thinks of Washington and some of these key players that are known to most people. But he said, you really have to go back before that. And he actually went back a generation almost, and he pointed out 4 or 5 key pastors in the country, people like Jonathan Mayhew and even back to Whitfield and others like that, that he said had sown the seeds of liberty, and that it was because of what they were planting in the hearts of men all across the colonies, they began to understand a biblical worldview of government and really understand what liberty was all about, and that freedom was not something that you derived from a king. It didn't come from a fellow man. It came from God, and that the purpose of government was to protect those rights. And so government actually got its power from us. Of course, we see that reflected in the language of the Declaration of Independence, which Adams was probably more responsible for than anyone. I mean, I know Jefferson wrote it, but Adams is the one that politically was maneuvering behind the scenes to make it happen and actually get the votes. And so, as you mentioned, Jonas Clark, he's one of my favorite pastors of the Revolutionary period, because he actually was instrumental at Lexington. So if we want to really tell the story of the Declaration of Independence, we've got to go back more than a year before that to April 19, 1775. I mean, that's the shot heard around the world. That's the story that we read about with Paul Revere and that sort of thing. But again, always going back even before that, Clark had been preaching from that pulpit for nearly 20 years, sermons of liberty. I mean, he had literally been stoking the hearts of men to understand what freedom was all about. And we actually did one of our Chasing American Legends shows at Lexington. We actually went and got my kids marched with the Minutemen, and we watched the reenactment, and we were there to investigate who actually fired the first shot, because there's great debate about whether it was the British or the Americans. And it was amazing. I don't want to give away too much about the show, but it was amazing when we went and we really studied the sermons of Clark and what people said, and then specifically studied the sermon that he preached on the one-year anniversary of April 19th, where he lays out a detailed case for why the Americans would have never fired first. And he talks about how he had taught his men what just war is all about, and that you have to respond in defense. You cannot be the attacker. And it's just really interesting. And we came to the conclusion that it was definitely the British that fired first, but more importantly, the real first shot was the pen of Jonas Clark writing out those sermons for 20 years. And we stood there in his home, up in his study where his desk is and a bunch of his other books. It was just so neat to think about when this guy would sit there and write out those sermons and then go deliver them on a Sunday morning. I wonder if he knew that years later it would actually spark a revolution that would lead the greatest nation in the history of the world. It's those kind of guys and those kind of stories and the things that they live that made it so interesting. By the way, Clark is actually it was his house. We always hear about Paul Revere's ride. Well, it was Jonas Clark's house. That's where Paul Revere was going, because John Hancock and Sam Adams were actually staying at his house, and that's who the British were after. They had a bounty on their heads, and they wanted Hancock especially, and so they were headed to get them, and that's why Paul Revere was going to the pastor's house. So if people say pastors shouldn't be involved or Christians shouldn't be involved in politics, man, they were at the epicenter of the revolution. They were the ones actually creating the atmosphere that caused the revolution. So anyway, a lot of cool stuff about Jonas Clark. Anytime your listeners get a chance to I always encourage people to do their vacation with a purpose, right? Find a good place to go. Go to Lexington and visit Jonas Clark's house.
Oh, that sounds great. Okay, you're listening to Remembering History, The Quest for Truth. My guest is Rick Green. I'm Dan Muir. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Dennis, and this message is being brought to you by the real owner of Extreme Auto Repair, my lovely wife, Pam.
You're about to head out on vacation, and you're not really sure the condition your vehicle is in. The last thing you want to deal with on your vacation is vehicle repairs. Here at Extreme Auto Repair, we're interested in the longevity of your vehicle, so we've decided to offer a free pre-trip inspection for your vehicle.
Now, wait a minute, Pam. We're offering this for free? You sure you don't want to charge for that?
No, Dan. I've already talked to our manager, Sean, and we decided we want our customers to have the peace of mind that their vehicles will function well on vacation.
All right. So come on down to Extreme Auto Repair in Parker for our free pre-trip vehicle inspection, apparently.
With Extreme Auto, you'll be sure to have a great trip. Make sure you visit us at least 2 weeks before your vacation at 10274 South Dransfeld Road in Parker. See you then.
Josh Powell, local owner of Medi Weight Loss, believes reaching your weight loss goals requires a team effort. You need qualified partners who will help you make that permanent lifestyle change. At Medi Weight Loss, Josh proudly employs a full-time nurse practitioner, a medical assistant, and a nutritionist, all of whom dedicate themselves to your long-term success. With Josh and his team on your side, you will attain your goals because you won't face them alone. Call Josh today, 720-699-2500.
Alfonso Jimenez, local owner of Mr. Reuter, protects your investment in your home by providing permanent plumbing solutions. For homes over 40 years old, your slow drain probably points to bigger problems like cracks in your clay pipes. Instead of recommending a temporary fix, Mr. Reuter hunts for the underlying issue so you may plan for the future. Alfonso understands that your main line represents one of the most expensive systems in your home, so you want to prepare for problems down the road. When you call Mr. Reuter at 720-235-3625, you form a lasting partnership with an experienced local plumber who thinks long-term, just like you do. Offering 20-year warranties on sewer line replacements, Mr. Reuter will still be around weeks, months, even years from now, so you never need to worry about backed-up drains again. Call Mr. Reuter for a complete inspection of your clogged drains at 720-235-3625. It's not just plumbing. It's peace of mind.
Ryan Wood, KLZ's expert bankruptcy and real estate attorney, has spent his entire career helping people. He really loves this stuff. Ryan genuinely wants you to understand these complicated legal issues so you can make informed decisions that will help you move past your financial problems and get your life back. It doesn't matter how your money problems started or what has happened in your life that brought you to consider bankruptcy. Ryan will help you. When you find yourself screening all your calls because you know it's a bill collector, call Ryan Wood. When opening your mail makes you break out into a cold sweat, call Ryan Wood. When you get anxiety while checking your bank account, call Ryan Wood. Call Ryan Wood Law at 720-465-1406. That's 720-465-1406 today to find out how he can help you.
Remember, when you have that tickle for all of the best pop hits that bring you right back to the best times of your life, just switch the dial over to our sister station, Legends 810 AM and 94.3 FM. It's not your parents' boring old elevator music. Frank Sinatra, Chicago, Stevie Wonder, The Carpenters. At Legends, we play all of the legendary pop hits that you want to hear. Legends 810 AM and 94.3 FM. Good music, good fun, good radio.
And welcome back to Remembering History, The Quest for Truth. I'm your host, Dan Muir. and we are discussing the Revolutionary War and the real history of Independence Day. And our guest is founder of Patriot Academy and historian Rick Green. And Rick, when we left off, you know, you were talking about the involvement, especially of one pastor, Jonas Clark. But, you know, a lot of people in academia, a lot of historians stuff say, well, you know, the founding fathers, they were nothing but, you know, deists and slave owners. And they really didn't believe in God, and that America was based on secular ideas.
It permeates our education system today. It gets repeated not only in education and academia, but the media plays that same storyline. And of course, that makes sense if you're a liberal progressive and you want to get God out of the system and you want to get moral absolutes out of the system. You need to claim that the founding fathers themselves were either atheists or deists and didn't believe in moral absolutes in order to change the culture into that. But nothing could be further from the truth. And these guys, I mean, think about even the language of the Declaration. We hold these truths to be self-evident. So in other words, they're saying these things we're about to say, the laws of nature and nature's God, which is mentioned earlier in the Declaration, it shows us that there are rights and wrongs, that there are truths. In fact, they believe so much in moral absolutes and truths that they not only pledged their lives, fortunes, and sacred honor, they gave it. So they sacrificed everything for these ideas that they believe are truth, that they're moral absolutes. So this idea that they were atheists, agnostics, and deists is just, it's frankly, it's an absolute lie. I mean, you look at the founders, not that they were all Bible-thumping, you know, evangelicals, but they were certainly big proponents of Christianity as a faith, and most of them were, in fact, Christians. They lived it, they talked it, they wrote it, they spoke it. It just permeated everything in their life. There were a handful that were not. I mean, out of 250, roughly, founding fathers, and when I use that number, Dan, what I mean is that's the signers of the deck, the signers of the Constitution, the governors at the time, the major generals, the key players of the Revolution, the real founders of America. Out of those 250 folks, a lot of those are names people would know, like Franklin and Jefferson and Adams and Washington and those kind of folks. And then a lot of them are signers of the documents and key players that people don't know today, like Benjamin Rush and James Wilson and Governor Morris and Richard Henry Lee and people that were instrumental in launching the nation. But you add all those folks together, only about 10 of them were not Christians. So that's only about 5%. 95% were absolutely outspoken Christians. And even the 10 that I'm taking off the table, those 10 were not what we would today call a deist. It's certainly not atheist. None of them, you could say, were atheists. Even the 10 I'm taking off the table, they believed in God. They believed in the hand of providence. They believed God was involved in our daily lives. But they were not believers that Jesus Christ was God. So you couldn't call them, you know, in an orthodox definition, Christians. But you take a guy like Franklin, I mean, least religious of all of them. He and Paine, I guess, probably tied for that, of all the founding fathers. And even Franklin was an advocate for the Christian religion, even though he wasn't a personal profession, you know, he didn't profess Christ as his savior himself. He stood up at the Constitution Convention and actually kind of slapped the other guys over the head with the Bible. And in a little short speech, the guy quotes 14 Bible verses and reminds them the role that God played in the Revolution and how we would have never achieved independence without the hand of providence and how we saw it over and over and over again. And then he berates them with the idea of how could we possibly do this without prayer and without God? We're not smart enough. We don't have the minds. We don't have the mental capability to solve the great problems of our day. We need the illumination of God in our hearts and our minds. So he basically preached to them at the Constitution Convention. And that's at a point, you know, if you actually insert yourself in that summer of 1787, this was about 5 weeks in. And when you read the journals, it was really at a point of breaking. I mean, people had already left the convention and given up and said, there's no way this isn't going to work. And so he saved the day by quoting scripture and telling everybody, we've got to bring God back into the equation. In fact, George Washington said they broke and went to church. And I forget the guy that preached that particular sermon, but he said it just moved everyone and really changed the attitudes. And they came back and started, you know, being able to make the deals and reach agreement to get the Constitution done. So anyway, that's a long monologue there, bro. But just bottom line, in general, when you break down the numbers, absolutely most of them were Christians, outspoken Christians. A handful were not. But even the handful, they weren't atheists. They weren't agnostics. They weren't even deists the way we use that term today. And it really was a major, major factor in the founding, because that whole philosophy of there being a God, that God is the source of your freedom, not government, that's at the heart of what it means to be an American. And when you change that, when you take God out of the equation, you absolutely have to end up a Nimrod society instead of an Abraham society, to use Rabbi Lapin's terminology. in which government is the source of everything rather than God. And that is not a road we want to go down.
No, not at all. And you're listening to Remembering History, The Quest for Truth. I'm Dan Muir. My guest is Rick Green, and he's the founder of Patriot Academy and a historian. Hey, Rick, let's go back to Jonas Clark and the kind of that era. And
yeah.
So what's going on in the colonies? What's all the turmoil about? Why are people starting to become frustrated with the crown?
Yeah. It's interesting when you look at the Intolerable Acts and the Stamp Act and all the things that England was doing, it pales in comparison to how bad our government today is infringing upon our freedoms and overtaxing us and all those kind of things. So the things that the founders revolted over actually are less than what is happening in our nation today. And I always find that intriguing. I think the more we study what the founders said was a violation of their human rights. I mean, not even just the English Charter and the colony charters and all those things, but literally just a violation of human rights. We need to be thinking about today in terms of what our Congress is doing and not necessarily this particular Congress, but frankly, Congress for the last 25, 30 years continually taking away our freedoms is even worse than what they were facing. So it was tax issues, but it was also just the idea of the king breaking his bond and doing things that he said he wouldn't do and that England would not do. And that was a big part of what Jonas Clark and other pastors would preach about is that, you know, in order to have the right to declare independence, the other side has to break the deal first. And that's what they certainly felt like the king had done. And then the Boston Massacre really set things off. And of course, you know, most people don't realize John Adams is actually the guy that defended the British soldiers in that trial because he thought it was so important to have legal counsel. And you could argue that that was not entirely the British fault. You could step back and say, well, they shouldn't have had them stationed there in the first place, but they were certainly antagonized. But then at Lexington, you know, it was definitely a show of force at Lexington and Concord to say, we're going to prevent you. We're going to Concord to take your arms, to take your ammunition, to take your gunpowder. We're literally going to disarm you. And that's the point at which they said, you know, there's no way we're going to stand in defense and not allow this to happen. So it was brewing all over the country, but Boston was certainly the hotbed and the place that you could see that there was a counter peg about to explode. And that's exactly what happened on April 19th.
So Rick, you're an attorney and I won't hold that against you, obviously,
but at least not for long,
but let's go back to the Boston Massacre. I don't think a lot of people really understand what happened there and the fact, you know, that Adams was involved.
Yeah, it was basically a group of young, Americans that were antagonizing these British soldiers and actually even threw some snowballs at them and really kind of set them off. And then, you know, one of the British soldiers, I think, just got antsy, honestly, if you really look at the different accounts of what happened that day. And it was a terrible tragedy that happened. Frankly, it makes me think of some of the standoffs that we have today in America that make me so nervous about. You know, man, we do these big shows of force sometimes, you know, the land battles with the federal government and that sort of thing. I'm like, oh, I really hope that these guys can control themselves and we don't end up in another Boston Massacre type situation. And we end up with, you know, sometimes a mob mentality and there was a little bit of that going on. And that was actually the argument that John Adams made even in the trial itself.
That's interesting because now, if I remember right, John Adams actually defended the British soldiers.
That's right. That's right. It's exactly right. And he was essentially saying, you know, these guys were only doing their job and they were antagonized by these Americans. But what it did was, and it was, you know, and again, it wasn't it's hard to look at one specific moment in time and saying that's what started it. Even at Lexington, you can't say that one shot is what did it. It was years before that of this constant hammering by the English government to say to the Americans, you know, you're basically our peasants. You're going to do what we want you to do, even though you have no representation. And it was almost like, you know, this antagonizing was going on and on and on and on and on until finally there was that point of being pushed more than we could handle. And you know, you had guys like Sam Adams that certainly was stoking the fires. You know, I mean, Sam Adams wanted to see a revolution take place. He's John Adams' cousin and not refined like John Adams was, much more of a rabble-rouser type guy. And so he was celebrating when these kind of things would happen. And then, of course, you have the Boston Tea Party. And, you know, it's just step by step the opposition is rising in America. But one thing I really want to point out, Dan, is we sometimes think today that you know, you got to have everybody agree before you can move forward. And the revolution was really about 25% of the country that actually supported independence. You had 25% that were very much defending England and wanted to remain a part of Great Britain. They did not want to separate. They were the Tories, and they actually, some of them fought for the British and certainly did not support what we were doing. And then 50% in the middle that, you know, kind of like today, they don't even know what happened. You know, they're just wondering what's going on. They don't have a clue. And so, you know, I just point that out because even in today's environment, sometimes I have friends that say, oh, it's too late for America. Everybody's, you know, on welfare now, or too many are on welfare. Too many are taking from the government. We can't win things. We can't change things. I say, look, you don't need, I mean, in today's environment, you don't even need 10% of the country. If you got 10% of the country fired up and active, writing the letters, making the calls, running for office, getting involved, they can move and push the whole country one direction or the other. And so I just want to encourage people to realize that the revolution was not 100% of Americans going, we're going to, you know, we're against those mean old British. It wasn't that way at all. I mean, they were our brothers. We were considered ourselves British. You know, this was our country. And that's why when Richard Henry Lee got up on June 7th in 1776 and he made that motion, he said that these United Colonies are and of right ought to be free and independent states. That was literally treason. I mean, he was in the Continental Congress saying we're going to separate. That was treason against the mother country. And so John Adams seconded the motion, but the guy taking the journal, he literally scratched out their names because he knew King George is going after those two first. That's the two heads he's going to lop off if this thing passes. And so it was a big deal, and it was hotly debated. I mean, they debated for literally weeks, and finally one of the guys in Congress, in the Continental Congress there, his name was Dickinson, John Dickinson, later even more involved, but at the time he was not a supporter of the revolution and declaring independence. And he said, the people are not, they're not ripe for revolution. That was his words. And that's when John Witherspoon, who was another pastor, that's kind of a theme, you're going to hear that over and over again, the Reverend Dr. John Witherspoon stands up and he says, they're not only ripe, but rotting. It is time. We have to do this now. And it didn't even pass. I mean, it failed the first time that they voted, and it took some more wrangling and more debating. They had to get, you know, Thomas McKean had to send home for Caesar Rodney to get him there because the Delaware delegation was down to only two guys. Caesar Rodney was the third delegate, and obviously for independence, and McKean was for independence, but without Rodney there, it's a 1-to-1 tie. So Delaware's voting no, South Carolina voted no, Pennsylvania voted no. So he sent the dispatch rider to go get Caesar Rodney. Rodney gets word about it, and the dispatch said, if you don't get here in time for the next vote, independence will fail. And so Rodney gets on his horse. He rides all night long. And you talk about sacrifice. I mean, this guy had cancer of the face. He was actually scheduled for surgery in England, but couldn't now, if he signs the declaration, if he goes and votes for independence, he can't go back to England. So he's literally signing his death warrant by doing this. He rides all night. I mean, painful experience. Gets there. Literally walks in Independence Hall just in time and cast the tie-breaking vote. So he's kind of known as the midnight rider that saved independence. And that's why when you see that Delaware quarter, each state gets to, you know, has somebody on their particular quarter and commemorative quarter. And it's actually Caesar Rodney on that horse making that midnight ride. So there's just story of guys like that that saved the day.
Yeah, you know, Rick, that's just a fascinating story. And I didn't know about that one. I like to think I know a lot of these, but I didn't know that story. You know, the other thing, too, is you were talking about today. You were talking about, well, actually back then, you know, 25-4, 25 against revolution, and 50% had no idea what was going on. But, you know, there's also this movement today to where people are saying, well, we need to rise up. We need to get our guns. We need to arm ourselves. We need to take down this government. And, you know, Rick, if I remember right, they petitioned England a long, 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 long time before they ever thought of raising weapons against the crown.
Years of it. And even then, even at the point at which they were, you know, mustering and practicing and drilling and getting militias together, even then it was, we still will not attack. We will not be the ones to attack. We must only be ready for self-defense. And I would definitely say to folks out there today, you know, look, I get the frustration. There are days that I wonder, where can I go and start over? And I mean, it's, you know, I have my days like that too. It is,
It's horrible what's happening in our country. But here's the beauty of what our founders did. Because of the revolution, because they were willing to grab that musket over the fireplace and go march off to war, and because they laid down their lives and gave their lives, fortune, and sacred honor, they fought a revolution with bullets, and they created a system where, Dan, we can have a revolution, but we get to do it with ballots.
Right.
We don't have to take up arms. We don't have to be violent. We have been given a system that everything we need to turn America to the right direction, it's at our fingertips. I mean, all the tools are right there in the toolbox. The problem is just simply that we don't use the toolbox.
No,
we don't take the tools that the founders gave us and the freedoms that God's blessed us with. Honestly, Dan, we're basically that wicked and slothful servant that refused to take the talent and go work it and invest it and multiply it, unlike the other two who doubled what they had or tripled. I mean, here we are. We're not even using the freedom that we have. And so I would say to those people that are frustrated right now, I get it. I'm with you. I'm just as frustrated. But we need to take that frustration and turn it into follow through and actually use the freedoms that we've been given and talk to our friends and our neighbors, talk to our kids and our grandkids, encourage them to have a heart of gratitude for what we do have. And a sense of responsibility, you know, put the burden on our neighbor's shoulder and our kids' shoulders and say, look, you can't just be a citizen in a free society and be a leech on society and just enjoy the blessings of liberty. You got to accept the burden and the responsibility of that liberty to do our part. And every one of us has a role we can play.
Well,
not everybody has a radio program like you or gets to go out and speak like I do, but everyone has a voice and they have people they can influence.
Yeah, we all have a role to play. You know, part of the problem is too, is the government education system. You know, the government controls the schools.
Yes.
So the government then controls what is taught. And the last thing the government's going to teach you is how to change the government. And so that's
right.
Why places like Patriot Academy and RickGreen.com, Wall Builders, institutions like that can really help educate people into knowing what their rights and responsibilities are.
You're 100% right. And that, you know, honestly, the typical education system today, rather than teaching citizens how to use their freedom, is purposely teaching citizens not to use their freedom and to be docile and to just accept, you know, everything from the government, let the government take care of you. And it's causing the people to not even realize they have the right to stand up and fight back with these tools that we're talking about, these constitutional freedoms that we have. So you're exactly right. That's why it's so important for people to not just be fed hand-to-mouth education, but instead become proactive and say, where can I go? Who can I seek out? What classes can I go take? There are so many tools online right now, so many great teachers and professors and others that have done great classes on. I mean, Michael Ferris has a great Constitution class. Hillsdale has a good one. I think David Barton and I have the best one, of course. But I mean, there's tons of places out there where you can go learn great stuff about the Constitution, like you're talking about Patriot Academy programs, where you can go and hands-on really see what it's like. I look, for me, Dan, I remember in high school going to play at the state baseball tournament in Austin. I grew up in Dallas, and we went down to Austin to play in the tournament, and our coach took us over to the Capitol. And I couldn't help but think, and I think most people think like this, this is another world. You know, even as driving by the Capitol, I think that's a different breed, man. Those people are from the right side of the track. I'm from the wrong side of the track. I could never influence that world. And we tend to think that our government is just too far from us, or it's too big. We can't impact it. And that is so wrong. I mean, I was in less than 10 years from that moment when I thought this is too big, I can't reach it. Less than 10 years later, I was on the House floor as a House member voting and representing 150,000 people and influencing a state of 20 million people. So trust me, the system works, but we have to work the system. We've got to recognize that the tools work. They're right there at our fingertips. We've got to get out of this mindset that somebody else is going to tell me how to, you know, what to do and how to do it. I'm going to have to become proactive. So go take some Constitution classes. Go to Patriot Academy, where you can be hands-on. As a student, you get to serve as a legislator. If you're over 25 years old, you get to come and basically serve as a lobbyist and learn how to testify in committee, learn how to sit down with your legislator and influence and you know, convince them to do the right thing. So there are plenty of tools out there. I encourage people to be proactive.
Yeah, you know, Rick, let's take this back then to the era of our founding of the country. I mean, you talk about a daunting task. You talk about you feeling powerless. I mean, here you are, a farmer, a guy with a pitchfork and maybe a old black powder gun of some sort, And you're going to do what? You're going to take on the strongest army in the world. You're going to take on Mother England because you have this ideal. You have this idea that you want to be free.
You can almost hear, you know, the arrogance of the British laughing, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, these guys really think that we're going to crush them so quickly. They will regret these decisions. And you're right. Daunting is exactly the word. I mean, it was the greatest military on the planet. We had very little to show for it, for our side. And you know, to think that we thought we could win is amazing. Now Patrick Henry, he was the opposite. You talk about an optimist. I mean, his speech on March 23rd, 1775 at St. John's Church there was all about, you know, look, there's 3 million of us in this country. God has given us exactly the right land to be able to fight this kind of battle. You know, he goes on and on and on about why strategically it was possible for us to win. But that was a very optimistic view, and most people did not share that. Even a lot of the ones that ended up going along and joining the revolution thought this is an impossible task, but maybe we'll get some concessions out of Great Britain. But it was an impossible task. And in the founders, Washington, Adams, so many of them talked about, as I mentioned Franklin earlier in his speech on the Constitutional Convention, I mean, they talked about the hand of providence, that God just seemed to, you know, the wind would come at the right time, the rain would come at the right time. I mean, over and over and over again, I think Washington counted over 40 times, he felt like a superintending providence was the word Franklin used, literally stepped in for the Americans. Go ahead.
So, Rick, while we got a couple of minutes, tell us one of your favorite stories of that time.
Oh, I think Washington crossing the Delaware has got to be the best one, man. I mean, he absolutely made a decision to do something that everybody thought was impossible and crazy. And when he did so, this was in the middle of a blizzard, and he's taken, you know, all of these guys, and his military has basically dwindled down to almost nothing. He's been losing every battle. Everybody's pretty much given up at this point. It's Christmas 1777. And he decides to cross this icy Delaware River in a snowstorm to go take on what we would almost call the Navy SEALs of today. I mean, these Hessian soldiers were the hired guns. These were battle-hardened. This was the idea that he could beat them, even if he did safely cross the river and get there in one piece. And they had to march, I forget, I think it was like 8 miles, in the snow. Many of these guys not even having shoes. I mean, he said you could see the blood in the snow where they marched. It was an insane, insane decision. But this was a guy... And for us, we really discovered kind of the mindset of Washington when we did our show, because we went and traced his footsteps first at the Battle of Monongahela when he's 23 years old, and he's riding back and forth in a hail of gunfire from the French and Indians for 3 hours, and he's the only officer not to get shot down. 80 other officers get shot down. He gets the bullet holes in his jacket, one in his head, I mean in his hat, you know, two horses shot up right, but they can't hit him. And he leaves that battle at 23 years old going, okay, God's obviously got something planned for me, because there is no way I could survive that.
Well, there's also an interesting part of this story where years later, an Indian that witnessed all that actually got to talk to Washington. Is that correct?
Yeah, and all of those guys, there were several sharpshooter Indians that had leveled on him more than a dozen times that said, you know, we don't miss, and we could not hit this guy. And so this Indian chief that he met years later said, you know, we finally decided that the Great Spirit was protecting you, and we just stopped shooting at you. And you know, for him, I mean, that's a pretty clear message. You leave a battle and something like that happens. And we actually had fun with this one, Dan. We did a reenactment of the battle. We took Brad Stein with us, the comedian up there, and we researched all this, went and looked at the French accounts, the Indian accounts, the American accounts. It was all the stories lined up exactly as we had heard it, and so then we reenacted it. And for Washington to ride back and forth for 3 hours with 600 Indians firing, 600 French and Indians firing at him, and not get hit, we said, okay, we're gonna have Brad Stein ride back and forth in a small confined area for 3 minutes, not
right?
3 hours, 3 minutes. There's only six of us, and we're gonna have musket paintball guns. That were very inaccurate, and we fired at him for 3 minutes and just pummeled him. It was great. We had a blast. But we, you know, we took for that. We go, look, there's no way Washington could have done it, because when you go to the battlefield, when you go to Braddock's Road up in Pennsylvania, it's a narrow, it's only about a 15 feet, you know, 15 foot wide road. And so that's part of why all these British soldiers were basically trapped. They were sitting ducks for the French and Indians. Anyway, it was a phenomenal event, and that's a fun episode for people to watch, but it's a phenomenal impact on Washington. And a couple weeks later, Samuel Davies, pastor that Patrick Henry grew up under and actually said that's where he learned to be a great orator, Samuel Davies preached a sermon and says, who knows but that this young Colonel Washington, God may be preserving to do something great for our country someday.
Yeah, and he did. So Washington survived that back in the French Indian Wars. And then fast forward back to the crossing of the Delaware. So everybody's got to think, this guy's nuts. What are we doing this for? Right. I mean, the Hessians, the Hessians, they were German, correct?
Yes. Yeah, and so, and you know, there was the idea that he could defeat them even if he got there safely was one thing. But to cross like he did in that weather. And see, Pete, we don't think about how they fought back then. I mean, at this point, the armies have shut down. I mean, they're basically shut down for the winter. Nobody's expecting to fight again until spring comes. So it truly was a surprise attack. And part of what we did another show where we actually went to this spot where he crossed the Delaware. And if you go to these places and you actually see, you know, what they went through, and then you kind of backtrack, like we even went back a couple years before to that first Continental Congress that met at Carpenter's Hall. And we went to Carpenter's Hall there in Philadelphia, and Washington was there, and he was in that meeting, and those guys prayed for 3 hours, and some of the other guys that were in that room said that Washington never got up. He never left his knees, he and Patrick Henry both. And you think about his mindset, for him as a leader. You look at his bronze statue in Valley Forge, where, again, in prayer, he's out there on his knees praying. He's praying so strongly that one of the guys that walked up on him was a Tory and saw him pray, and he went home and told his wife, when a guy prays that hard, God's going to answer his prayers. We're switching from being Tories to Whigs and joining the revolution. I mean, this is the kind of guy we're talking about. So when he made that decision to cross the Delaware, I don't think it was just, you know, on a whim or a Hail Mary pass. I think he truly believed God was going to protect he and his men, and they were going to win. And that's exactly what happened. Somehow, miraculously, they crossed, didn't lose a single man in the dead of night in that blizzard, crossing the river. And then they end up defeating the Hessians very quickly. It so motivates the rest of the country that I think his army had dwindled down to about 2,500 at that point. And within just a few weeks, he's back up to 15,000. So it just changed everything because of his bold decision.
Amazing. Okay, more on the Revolutionary War and Independence Day coming up on Remembering History, The Quest for Truth. I'm Dan Muir.
So, you haven't called Michael Bailey, the mobile estate planner, yet. But really, what's the worst that could happen today? Well, first, you could die without a will. Then your husband and your kids could fight over what you left behind. And then, because you didn't take a little time to make a plan, all of your assets will get distributed evenly by the probate court. And because you didn't equally divide your car or your house or anything else that's important to you, everything will need to be sold at auction, and all of the things that your family was supposed to keep to remember you will be lost. Then a couple of years later, after your family has completely forgotten all about you, your youngest child accidentally finds something that reminds them that you were once their mother, and one of your kids will have total nervous breakdown while the other decides to move to Nepal and take a vow of silence, and this causes your husband to lose his mind and run away to South America and live out his days as a poor plantation worker. Well, you get the point. All of this could happen because you didn't call Michael Bailey, the mobile estate planner, while you still had a chance. Call Michael Bailey to avoid the worst that could happen. He'll come to you and get your will drafted today.
You love your neighborhood, great schools, and close to your friends. Your home is perfect, except for the dated walnut kitchen with avocado appliances, and perhaps the moldy master bath that you're afraid to walk on barefoot, or the creaky deck, or the scary basement. But I digress. If you love your home and never want to move, but want to make it closer to your dreams, we can help. I'm Brian Murphy, owner of Front Range Mortgage, a local, Colorado-only team that's helped hundreds of homeowners to remodel their present, outdated house, turning it into a home of their dreams, without the trauma and expense of an unnecessary move. We have very affordable options to help you remodel your kitchen, bath, even scary basement with no money out of pocket, often even lowering your interest rate to boot. Call me and my local team for a painless 5-minute conversation to see how quickly you can be in your own dream home. Our number, 303-500-1900. That's 303-500-1900, or visit frontrangemortgage.com.
NMLS number 378844, regulated by the Division of Real Estate.
Your husband served his country faithfully in the Korean War. Today, Veterans Aid at Home honors his memory by helping you stay in the house you love together. You don't want to live in a nursing home. You simply need a little help around the house. Call 844-994-VETS. For absolutely no charge, Veterans Aid at Home will send a caregiver to help you with those little tasks, like laundry, so you may stay in the home you love. Call 844-994-VETS to receive free non-medical services in honor of your husband's faithful service.
Alfonso Jimenez, local owner of Mr. Rooter, protects your investment in your home by providing permanent plumbing solutions. For homes over 40 years old, your slow drain probably points to bigger problems. Instead of recommending a temporary fix, Mr. Rooter hunts for the underlying issue. When you call Mr. Rooter, you form a lasting partnership with an experienced local plumber who thinks long-term. Call Mr. Rooter today for a complete inspection of your clogged drains. 720-235-3625.
Wednesdays at 2, right here on KLZ 560, Dr. Stephen Olson of Colorado Wellness Dentistry reminds KLZ listeners how critical it is to get the right diagnosis.
Because as I like to say, if you treat the wrong problem, it doesn't matter how cheap it is, it's a waste of money. Conversely, if you treat the problem correctly, it's a bargain.
Hear more nuggets of wisdom from Dr. Olson every Wednesday at 2 during Ask the Experts.
And welcome back to Remembering History, the Quest for Truth. I am your host, Dan Muir. My guest is founder of Patriot Academy and historian Rick Green. And we've been talking about Independence Day and the Revolutionary War and the real meaning behind these dates and the histories and things like that. You know, Rick, when we hear the words, they gave their lives, their fortune, and their sacred honor, they really did. These weren't just words. They meant it. This happened.
No doubt. And, you know, some of these guys started the war with frankly pretty good lives. I mean, they had most of their freedoms. They had good businesses. They made decent money. Some of them were frankly pretty wealthy. And by the end of the war had given everything that they had. I mean, literally dying in debtor's prison, one of them, and not having any money left. Carter Braxton lost all of his ships. There was the kind of sacrifice that today we can't even fathom. And we think sacrificing, Dan, is that I had to stand in line for an hour to vote. You know, that to us is big sacrifice today compared to what these guys were doing. I mean, John Hart, he never even got to, you know, be reunited with his family after the British invaded his property and, you know, tried to evade him for nearly a year, never saw his kids again. I mean, there were some very difficult times. And it wasn't just the guys. I mean, the wives of the signers also experienced great loss. Elizabeth Lewis, her husband was Francis Lewis, one of the signers. And back then, when they went for him, they went to their home, and he wasn't at the home. The British demanded that she leave the home so that they could torch it, and she refused. She stood on the porch and said, "I'm not leaving." They fired a cannonball at her, lands on the porch right next to her, and she still refuses to leave. I mean, I'm a Texan. She kind of sounds like a Texas woman, but
yeah,
we didn't
she
have
does.
Yet, so. but she was tough, man, and so they end up arresting her. They put her in prison. She's so abused in prison and mistreated. She ends up dying as a result of her time there. I mean, story after story of the sacrifices that they made. And for us, when we think about what we have to do, we often think about our military guys. And no question, we have men and women that lay down their lives. They give everything for us to be able to continue to be free. But really, I want to challenge your listeners that say, well, you know, I'm not in the military, or I don't have a radio show, or I don't do. What can I possibly do? And I want them to think about lives, fortunes, and sacred honor and what that means to us today. So for those guys, it was literally, we're going to battle, we're going to give our lives, we're going to die. I mean, it was a Nathan Hale type attitude of, I only regret that I have but one life to give for my country. I mean, here's a 21-year-old willing to die, lay down his life, he's hung, and his only regret is that he couldn't do it more than once. But so lives for them, that was literally giving everything that they had. For us, it's more living the freedom they were willing to die for. So they died for our freedom. And you think about our every generation of Americans, some war that so many have laid down their lives for, they died for it. Now, what are we doing to live it? How do we live out that freedom and lay down our lives on a daily basis? So it may be 50 years of investing in freedom and serving maybe in some elected capacity or just volunteering for other campaigns or whatever it might be, I would encourage everyone to look for something they can do every week that's just a one-hour investment, maybe making phone calls or like we said earlier, studying the Constitution or watching some good programming that's actually teaching the family about history and those kind of things. So lives is real, and it's something we can do today. Fortunes, investing in freedom. I mean, literally sponsoring a kid to go to Patriot Academy, donating to a candidate that we know shares our values and is going to stand for freedom and that is not a politician but a patriot. And the difference between the two is a politician is thinking about the next election. A patriot is thinking about the next generation. It's a totally different mindset. A patriot is willing to cast that vote or do what's necessary in office, even if it means not getting reelected, but they're doing the right thing. And they're not. It may not be popular at the time, but they're doing what's best for the country. So giving to candidates like that, giving to legal organizations that are fighting to defend religious liberty and defend our First Amendment rights. There's so many good ones out there, man. Alliance Defending Freedom, Liberty Council, Liberty Institute, First Liberty Institute. We could go on and on. There's a lot of good groups. So I encourage people, look, 1%, 2%, 3% of your income, you know, take a small percentage and start looking for causes that you can give your life, your fortune, and then your sacred honor. And that's, you know, frankly, Dan, what we're doing right now. We're speaking truth regardless of cost. It's being willing to stand up and say, this is right, that's wrong, what you're doing will hurt or destroy the country, this is the direction we need to go, let's do the right thing regardless of what it costs. That's what sacred honor is all about. It's saying, look, I'm gonna do what's right, I'm gonna stand for truth, even if it costs me. And some of the business people that are listening right now, it may cost you a customer because you stood for truth. And they say, well, I'm not going to buy from you anymore. Well, I'm still going to stand up for truth. If you're in office, it may cost you an election. It may cost you money. Whatever the cost is, being willing to stand for truth. And if we take ourselves back to that day when they stood up, and it wasn't July 4th, just in case I want to mess up everybody's history here, August 2nd is the day they actually signed the Declaration of Independence. So July 4th, John Hancock and Secretary Thompson signed it. But the rest of them gathered on August 2nd. And I cannot even fathom the pressure that would have been on those men not to sign, knowing that they were literally signing their death warrant. In fact, as they were signing, and Secretary Thompson was the one at the front of the room calling them forward one by one, and they would sign in total silence. I mean, you could literally hear the pen scratching along the surface. But when the little guy gets called forward, his name was Elbridge Gerry, and he was the smallest of all the founders. When he gets called forward, there's a big guy in the room named Benjamin Harrison. He's the largest of the founders. He decides he's going to break the silence. And what he says is the little guy's about to sign. Benjamin Harrison, he says, I shall have a great advantage over you, Mr. Gerry, when we're hung for what we're now doing. By the size and great weight of my body, I'm going to be dead within a minute or two. But by the lightness of yours, you're going to dance in the air for an hour or more before you're finally dead. So he's cracking a joke about the fact that they're all going to die as a result of what they're doing. And Benjamin Rush actually recounts this in a letter to John Adams. And he said, we really did. We thought, you know, we laughed for a minute and then everybody got deathly quiet because we realized what he was saying. And we really did believe we were signing our death warrant. But they did it. They got up, they came forward, they signed. It says, you know, in fact, I love the fact that it calls on divine providence. You know, it says, in support of this declaration with a firm reliance on divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. Those guys did it. It's time for our generation to be willing to stand up and do it. And just like we talked about earlier, Dan, it's a revolution, not with bullets, but with ballots. There are plenty of tools in the toolbox. We just got to start using it.
That's right. You know, I can't help but think, though, you know, as they're signing this thing, and they're right. I mean, they're going to get hung. I mean, first of all, there's no way they can win this war. There's absolutely no way unless God's in it and a whole bunch of miracles happen, which, you know, fortunately did. But when you think about that, they're going to be hung, destroyed and forgotten. Do you think the king would ever remember these people again? Do you think if we were part of Great Britain that these people would ever be remembered again? No legacy, your
name ruined. Exactly. I mean, that was that whole sacred honor. It was like, you know, if we lose, our family's name's ruined, our fortunes are gone. You know, we're literally putting everything on the line to sign this document today. We're only asked to give a little bit. I mean, a little bit of our life, a little bit of our fortune, a little bit of our sacred honor. And if we do that, though, the beauty is this system is designed so well, with just a little bit of effort, we can move the country in the right direction. We see it all the time, and there are so many good victories happening. You don't hear about them on major media, but it's happening. We do our Well Builders Live program every Friday is nothing but Good News Friday. We just talk about good things that are happening. Are there bad things happening? Absolutely. Are there terrible, you know, the things being done in our country? No doubt. But there are good things happening when good people stand up for what is right and what is true. And so I just encourage your listeners, look for an area, pray that God will show you, what can I do with my, I'm just going to give a little bit of time this week, a little bit of money, a little bit of my sacred honor to do my part to bring our country back to that place worthy of the sacrifice that's been made in the past.
Okay, so Rick, again, you've got this new DVD series out. What's the name of it? What's it about? How can people get a hold of it?
Chasing American Legends, and we actually go to, you know, we march with the Minutemen at Lexington. We go to Independence Hall. We tell the story of the signing there. We go to MLK's church, and actually Alveda King, his niece, walks us through and tells us incredible stories about why he was successful in the civil rights movement with peaceful protests. We contrast that to some of the stuff that's happening today. We do an episode where we're in the vault at David Barton's library, and we bring to life all those incredible documents. We go to the Alamo. We go we do a deal on Paul Revere's ride. We actually have this great competition between one of my boys defends Paul Revere. My daughter takes up Sybil Ludington, a female midnight rider, 16 years old. They have a great contest to decide who was the better midnight rider, and I'll give you a hint, it was the girl. just phenomenal stories of great heroes throughout history. It's a fun way to learn. Your folks really enjoyed it. I mean, little kids up through grandma and grandpa, the whole family will enjoy it. It's called Chasing American Legends. Chasing American Legends, available at rickgreen.com.
Okay, yeah, that can all be found at rickgreen.com, and also there's a link there for Patriot Academy if you have an older student that might be interested in something like that. And I'll tell you what, it was life-changing for my son. And once again, thank you for doing that. And Rick, I really want to thank you for coming on the program and sharing these historical stories with us and teaching us about the Revolutionary War and Independence Day. Thank you so much, my friend.
Enjoyed it, Dan. Thank you very much. By the way, military veterans out there, we have a new Patriot Academy just for you, so check it out at patriotacademy.com.
Sounds great. Thanks again, Rick. Okay, and I'd like to thank creator and executive producer Marie Christine, engineer and producer Dave Keita, and thank you for listening to Remembering History, The Quest for Truth. I'm your host, Dan Mueller.